Last summer, both the city of Asheville and Buncombe County passed resolutions intended to begin making amends for generations of discrimination. The resolutions included a goal of increasing Black home ownership. 90% of homeowners in Buncombe County are white, compared with 3.9% of homeowners who are African Americans. Evanston, Illinois, another U.S. city seeking to make reparations to minorities, is implementing a reparations program involving a housing grant program providing funding to those who can demonstrate that they are descendants of those impacted by redlining and other discriminatory housing policies in their city. What sort of reparations funding would you most like to see implemented in Asheville and Buncombe County? And would it apply only to descendants of Asheville residents during the eras of redlining, urban renewal, and Jim Crow, as does the Evanston program? Or would your ideal program extend to all Black residents of the city and county?
I feel that I'm privileged to live in a city that is undertaking a historic process like reparations. And so I think it's a very exciting time for Ashevillians, no matter their background, to be going through a reparations process. But I will say that I have been on an appointed board and was interfered with at the political level by a sitting city council person. And I learned from that lesson that when you ask citizens to come together and bring you their best ideas, you let them do their work and then move on from there. So I have trust in the reparations process, and I look forward to seeing what they bring to city council. And I look forward to being on council when their work is completed and presented. But I do want to acknowledge that my knowledge of history, I think, is the sins of Asheville are well documented. And I think that we can look very clearly at what the damage has been done. The state of Black Asheville very clearly shows the damage that has been done, and all the resources that have been transferred systematically over decades from African Americans in Asheville to the city government and to white neighbors as well. So we know that these sins of Asheville include the deprivation of safety, of both life and liberty, and the taking of land through urban renewal processes and through highway projects and such, and also through a deprivation of opportunity. And so that opportunities presented to white residents were much greater than those available to Black residents. So I want to say, hey, I understand the scope of the problem here, but I think it would be inappropriate for a politician to get ahead of the group of citizens that we've tasked with going through this process. And so I eagerly await to see their results. And I do hope that they look at the example of Evanston.
Asheville's January 2022 point in time count revealed the city's unsheltered population had doubled since the 2021 count. Between 2020 and 2022, shelter bed inventory declined from 285 to 144. Do you support the creation of more shelter spaces inside the city? And how would you respond to those homeowners, businesses, and neighborhood associations that do not want such shelter communities near their own?
I absolutely support more shelter space. The numbers clearly show we need it. Also, just anecdotally, just moving through life in this city, you can tell that there is a great need for more housing, and that includes shelter. So I firmly support the creation of more shelter space. And I know that that requires cooperation with the county and other partners. So I hope that process can be accelerated, because there is a lot of people who are hurting. And I think it hurts. It should hurt us all to see when some of us are hurt, when some of our neighbors are hurting. I know there's been some pushback from some neighborhoods. And I think that part of the reason for that pushback is that the city's approach to this has been very clumsy. and they have not well targeted this use. So I think there's a lot of potential to just do things better from the ground up on both finding better partners with better track records than Shangri-La, who I'm skeptical of, which is the Ramada site in East Asheville. And I also think, there has to be an acceptance that the economic situation that we find ourselves in, the realities of this means that we are going to have to, that this the resources of a shelter are going to have to be located someplace. They should be located closest to other resources that these folks need so they can more easily connect with that. And that indicates that it should be probably closer to the city center. And so I'm hoping that would be the result. It doesn't seem quite appropriate to put people in need of such services deep into neighborhoods and such like that. So I think that this will not be such an issue in the future if we learn from how the city has already sort of made some mistakes and adapt. So I'm not terribly worried about that. I'm more interested in getting a shelter and resources like that closer to the city center where there are better resources that can be connected.
Some residents have been supportive of the choices that the city and county have made to encourage employers such as Pratt & Whitney to come to Asheville and Buncombe County. Detractors argue that the necessary tax incentives are too large and that such industries are bolstering a military-industrial complex that causes deaths half a world away, while supporters say that the promised average wages at these new plants will exceed the county's average weekly wage of $916 and that such plants provide good jobs for locals. What would be your opinion on recruiting plants for the city and the county, which bring high-paying jobs but are involved in military work?
This is a marvelous question. It really calls into play, I think, the ethics of that are so complicated when you're making decisions at the city council level. First off, I would say I would not actively recruit any military industrial companies. I would not actively, but that does not mean that a military industrial company such as Raytheon or the like would not seek something of their own accord from the city or the county. I find that this is probably going to be more of a county issue to deal with just because of the availability of the tracts of land for such operations or probably means that this would be more of a county decision, and that at the city level, we'd just be sort of washing idly by as it was in the case with Pratt and Whitney. But let's say that there is a situation, and I would say that I would not use any local tax money to incentivize the military industrial complex to locate here. They are already massive beneficiaries of our tax dollars that are routed through the federal government. And I do not see why they need to dip into our pockets when they are already so well-funded. I do see that almost the entirety of our economic development budget locally, it constitutes the occupancy tax and the marketing of our community for tourists. North Carolina ranks 50th for wages in the tourism and hospitality sector. And I think that no economic development money should ever go to any industry or corporation that is not committed to paying above the local median wage. Because if you incentivize growth below the median wage, you are hurting that median wage. You are lowering it. And so I would be supportive on a case-by-case basis of using tax incentives for economic development outside of the military-industrial complex. But it would have to be jobs that were above and beyond the local median wage, because I see there's no sense in undermining your own population and with data like the median wage. There's just no sense in pushing that number lower with public tax dollars.
County Commissioner Amanda Edwards called for a walkout of North Carolina teachers as a part of a push for higher pay, as reported on the Asheville FM NewsHour on August 24. She said that she thought such a walkout would be a bold step. Would you support such a call, considering that national test results released on September 1st showed in stark terms the pandemic's devastating effects on American school children, with the performance of nine-year-olds in math and reading dropping to levels from two decades ago?
Whether I support Amanda Edwards or not is immaterial. I support labor. I support the teachers. The damage that has been done to our kids has not been done by teachers that are asking for better wages and better working conditions. It's been done by policymakers who have refused to supply the resources necessary for education. So if there were to be a walkout, if the teachers wanted to do that, if they thought that was the way forward, I'd be with them on it. But I'm not going to get ahead of them. I'm going to be right alongside them. But I do think that it would be inappropriate to blame the teachers airing legitimate grievances for the educational damage done to our kids when it's the policymakers that bear the ultimate responsibility for this. So I think the teachers, if the teachers were to choose to do such a thing as a walkout, they, in the long term, they would probably be securing a much better educational advantage for our kids. So that's how I would see that.
The purpose of the city's Municipal Climate Action Plan is to bring together the city's 2009 Sustainability Management Plan, updated resolutions, and newly adopted resolutions around climate resiliency and climate justice into a comprehensive plan via which the city can move forward with planning for action regarding climate change. Work on the plan began last September and was originally intended to be complete by the first week of April, but a draft version first slated for February is not yet available, and Council's planning calendar indicates that members won't vote to approve the document until at least late October, and there has been no availability of any interim documents to the public for comment. Do you believe that this work meets appropriate standards for transparency and accountability? And what do you hope that the plan, when completed, will include?
I absolutely do not think that this is good enough for the public's right to know about what our city government is doing. This is part of a large trend of lack of transparency in decision-making and processes that the city has showed. I have long been committed to government transparency at the local level and have done what I could in my seats at the Downtown Commission and the Public Art and Cultural Commission to make sure that needed information is requested in a public forum and then released. It doesn't always work, but I've tried it. And so I absolutely think that they're not doing a good enough job in transparency, and this is just one example of that. Now I have a sort of more modern and broader view of what environmental justice and sustainability can look like at the city level. Obviously, at the federal and state level, there are tools at your disposal that can really make big differences in energy creation and regional infrastructure and incentives for entire industries. At the local level, where the real levers of power that we have wide ability to make decisions on is in land use and land use planning. And it's in our built environment. We know that a tremendous amount of our carbon footprint comes from how we live, where we live, and how we get to work. It is by no accident that the lowest carbon footprint per person zip code in the country is in Manhattan. And so the way we decide to build our city out and or up and how what we will do to minimize traffic and emissions has a lot to do with our land use planning, and we do have a lot of control there. So I would very much like to see our built environment, which will persist for decades from now, take that into consideration, because much of the damage that we've done to our environment has come from building cities in a way that it is simply not possible to have a low carbon footprint for most individuals in this country. And so we really need to think about how we are building our city if we want to be serious about the environmental impact that is going to not that is, would stretch far into the future. Not just how many solar panels can we put on how many rooftops, and how many trees can we plant? Those are great questions to ask. Those are great things to do. But I think that the biggest issue about how we can have a lower impact on our environment is in how we build our city out. And that's land use planning. I make a note that Japan is the most heavily forested country in the industrial world. There are 2/3 of the country is covered in forest. And yet they are a highly developed country, lots of mass transit, and very dense city centers. And obviously you can't just do that overnight, but there are ways to have a large population and to be very environmentally sustainable.
On August 8th, Asheville FM reported that the city of Asheville and Buncombe County filed a class action antitrust lawsuit against HCA Healthcare Incorporated, Mission Hospital, and related business entities seeking injunctive relief and damages resulting from alleged anti-competitive practices. Currently, HCA Healthcare, Novant Health, and Advent Health have applied to build 67 beds and have filed certificates of need with the Division of Health Service Regulation. Of these three entities, HCA, Novant, and Advent Health, which would you, as a council member, support, and why?
So I don't know enough about the respective applications of Novant and Advent Health to pick. I think they're both making competitive offers. However, I do know that HCA absolutely should not be supported in their bid for expansion here. I believe that healthcare should not be for a profit, and that healthcare is a right. And while I do think that having competition for HCA in the area will be good for health outcomes, I don't think that one competitor or two competitors in a healthcare market is adequate to really solve the great issues that are being presented in the healthcare industry. And so while I welcome the competition, whether it be from Novant or Advent Health, I think that we desperately need help at the federal level on fixing the entire healthcare system. But having some competition at the local level to help keep HCA in check will have positive outcomes. And I think that I wait to see how the application processes go with both those companies, and also just what my neighbors are thinking, what healthcare professionals would like to do, because we've all heard horror stories about HCA.
Recently, a 19-mile section of the French Broad River in Buncombe County was declared impaired by water quality officials. In 2020, 69% of sample sites along the river failed to meet the EPA's E. coli standards for safe recreation. Would you feel comfortable recreating in the French Broad River? What interventions, if any, do you think the city should be making on behalf of the river's water quality?
I don't often get in the French Broad River. It's actually just down the street from my house. I cross it almost every day. But I do know that the turbidity of the water, or how transparent it, how well you can see through it, is a great indicator of how dirty it is. You can actually, because the two go together, because a lot of the pollutants in the river come from runoff. And while some of that runoff is far upstream of Asheville, and at the city council level, we don't get to make any decisions about that. At the local level, we do know that a lot of the impervious surfaces that are growing as parking lots and roadways, the not adequate. A lot of that stormwater is not adequately dealt with, and it washes instead of filtering through the ground, it washes right into the river, and then we have these issues. I do note that I recently saw some data that the sewer department, the MSD, has reduced sewer outflows drastically in the past 20 years. And I know it took a lot of investment to do that. We've seen that in higher bills for our sewage. And that's what that takes. You have to, if you want to have better infrastructure, you have to pay for it. And so there has been a lot of progress made in that department. I think that the impervious, the growth of so much developed space and so much more impervious land, so creating runoff in the city of Asheville is an issue, and I'd like to tackle that. I'm not a big fan of parking lots. I think it's a terrible use of space with a lot of terrible outcomes, and pollutants in the river is just one of them.
Asheville's tourism director, Vic Isley, said on August 31st that hotel bookings have been down for three straight months, May, June, and July. Just a few years ago, hotels were 100% booked during this time. She also said that the trend is expected to continue through the fall. This fall in bookings occurred in the face of a 2021-22 BCTDA board budget, in which $15.3 million was designated for advertising and public relations expenditures, including $1.3 million paid for Asheville advertisements during the 2022 U.S. Open tournament in New York City. Given the decline in bookings, would you say that the TDA expenditures were a good use of public funds? And would you suggest continuing expenditures at that level during your tenure on the city council?
First off, I wish that TDA money was controlled by city council. That would make the job way more interesting at city council if you had access to that pot of public funds to be able to deal with some of our local issues. I want to be very direct here. I believe that we should abolish the TDA. I believe that we should keep the occupancy tax to use it to fund local needs, but we should not be using our occupancy tax to essentially fund a flourishing industry. People often ask me when I talk about abolishing the TDA, you know, they imagine that tourism will drop off a cliff, and that absolutely would not happen. What would happen in the hypothetical situation where we get rid of the TDA and the hotel and tourism industry loses millions of dollars in advertising budget, they would do exactly what every other industry does, which is create their own trade group and advertise with their own money. They don't need to use public money to advertise this area any longer. It made sense in 1983 when the TDA was created because we needed an economic miracle at that time. This was Appalachia and Asheville in general. We know the economy was really bad. So many people were leaving this area. And in some ways, the growth of tourism has been an economic miracle. But it is now well past the point that they need any public funds to try to keep their industry going. They're a big grown-up industry, and they can spend their own money on their own ads. Pretty sure everybody's heard of Asheville by now. So they've bought the mind space for this area. And I want to say that I work in tourism. I actually work for Zoom, and I understand, even with my own life, I have a complicated relationship with tourism because I very much enjoy my job. I love meeting visitors, but I also know that the pressure on our housing and the pressure on our infrastructure is beginning to be so great that we're going to have to pull back on that. And that money, I think that the first job with the occupancy tax money is to keep it at home, and then we can get together and fight about what we should do with it after that. But I think that if we can all get together and agree that the money needs to be kept right here and end this giant handout to very, very large, profitable corporations, very few of which have created living wage jobs, we will be better off very quickly.
High density housing is a primary goal of the city, as described in Living Asheville, a comprehensive plan for our future, and adopted by City Council. Neighborhood associations and local homeowners have spoken out against previous urban development plans and recent changes to the city's zoning laws in favor of maintaining city character, green space, and property values. Do you support high density housing development? And how would you respond to community members accompanying complaints?
So I do support high density housing development, but I also know that if you grow too quickly, that is not politically sustainable. And so I think that there is a sweet spot that we can get. And what I'm calling that is incremental growth. I find that neighborhoods will oppose exponential growth. When you go from one or two stories to five or six stories, neighborhoods are going to rise up against that. But we also know that we have a missing middle problem, as in there's a lot of smaller developments that are not getting built. And we do seem to have been making this sort of really big jump between a neighborhood of, like the one I live in, one or two stories, and then suddenly there's, like on Charlotte Street, a proposal for a six-story building. I don't see a politically sustainable path to get development that quickly of that type in these neighborhoods. And I think that a politically unsustainable path might be a great idea. We need all this housing, but if it's politically unsustainable, it won't happen. So we need to find something that addresses our known needs around housing, and it has to be done in a way that's politically sustainable. Otherwise, it's not going to work. So what I'm referring to is incremental development, which is what the Strong Towns approach. If you are familiar with this this movement, it's a great website and series of books. Incremental growth is sustainable. It builds neighborhoods. It adds character as neighborhoods grow. Exponential growth is really just gentrifying. And so much of what we're building right now is not actually housing for locals. So much of it right now is the type of housing that are investment properties, which is basically just a housing unit shaped bank account for someone else. So even in the complex across the street from me is mainly dark during the week. And some of the apartments on the weekends, you see people visiting then. They're not short-term rentals, they're just vacation homes and investment properties. And we can build all the investment properties we want, and it will not make a difference for our housing supply, for our affordable housing shortage. We can't possibly build enough bank accounts for Charlotte residents to own here. So we need to concentrate on incremental growth that adds to our housing stock, not just to the investment housing stock for out-of-town investors. So that is how I see the path forward on trying to answer the NIMBY-YIMBY questions that are out there, but also trying to answer the dire need for affordable housing, which the private market just completely failed to address.
Well, candidate for City Council in Asheville, Andrew Fletcher, thank you so much for answering our questions today on Asheville FM NewsHour.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure to be here.
Thank you.